to the 2041 Project Podcast Season 2, the podcast that asks, what's it like to have the internet in your head? I'm Hiro Contrejas. The 2041 Project is a podcast of public service radio at the SUNY Oneonta Laboratory for New Journalism, in accordance with the Digital Media Authenticity Act of 2038. This podcast is being recorded on April 15th, and the province token is...
Hiro, this is Corominas. Just before we docked, I recorded a high-level encryption protocol being used. I'm still running analysis, but it's likely the same signature. I think you're being followed by the same person who was trailing to Dej.
Oh, that's bad.
We don't know anything for sure, so relax.
Corominas, when you tell people to relax, they definitely don't relax.
I am sorry. I'm working on getting an image of this person for you. I'm blocked by privacy protocols. As soon as I get it, I will send it to you.
That's okay. I'll keep my cool. I grew up in Jersey. I'm tougher than I look. I'll just focus on my job. I've got an episode to produce. Max Rodriguez graduated from SUNY Oneonta last spring and was drafted into the new Farms Administration's Urban Forestry Corps.
I'd hoped to go to Chicago, but they were starting a new project in Detroit, so here I am.
Max met me at Detroit International Aerodrome, and we both paused to marvel at the site. Over 50 airships moored to steel and glass mooring towers, as many as in the air.
We're going to go right by a factory that makes airships on our way, or at least it fabricates the PV skin for them.
Everyone knows about Detroit's maglev trans system, so I started to head to the platform when we got out of the aerodrome, but Max grabbed my arm and pointed instead to a line of colorfully painted bicycle rickshaws lined up. The driver put my bag on my back. As I got in, I noticed the painting on our rickshaw was of Mina Niazi, the geo engineer killed when those crazy terrorists blew up the CZ Tower in 39. Nadej would have loved it. We passed what looked like a giant old factory, but every window was strung with clotheslines, and the large flat roof hosted what appeared to be a little community of bungalows, all painted with the same bright colors as the rickshaw.
Well, that's part of the vast new Dhaka neighborhood. Detroit took in over 20,000 refugees from Bangladesh, and many of them reclaimed these vast assembly plants. They built houses on top and converted the rest to workshops. This rickshaw was made there, actually. New Dhaka electric pedicabs are famous all over the world.
We entered a neighborhood like I've never seen before. Block after blocks of streets laid out on a grid. But there are very few houses, maybe two or three per block. Everything else was a verdant garden. Raised beds with tomatoes and cucumbers, three sister gardens, fig, apricot, and olive trees. Max explained,
Detroit used to be famous for being one of the most depopulated cities in the country. The story of this city is really the story of the entire area once called the Rust Belt, from Milwaukee to Utica.
That's all those factory cities that went bust?
Yeah, during the first wave of globalization. Now Detroit's population is larger than it was during the Motown era. But the settlement pattern this time around is totally different. We just saw mixed light industrial and residential, and this is permaculture and residential. This urban farm is the city's oldest. It's the model for the project I'm working on. Detroit has neighborhoods where over 80 languages are spoken. And of course, the city grew and continues to grow from the second migration out of the south, especially the Gulf Coast. That's why we got the best Mardi Gras around. Now we're on Jefferson Avenue Park. It used to be for cars, but now it's got the maglev line and bike paths and outdoor restaurants and shops. Now, they still hang on to their electric cars in Grosse Pointe, but here in Jefferson Chalmers, we've converted to green streets years ago.
I noticed that very few of the people I saw were white. It was overwhelmingly shades of brown. We passed a few unarmed police officers talking to a Bangladeshi family. We turned off the park and came to another urban farm.
This area used to be a bedroom community for the auto factories until the city's industry collapsed and the population followed. A company bought up this neighborhood, almost 50 acres, and they demolished most of the houses. They wanted to turn it into a swanky extension of Grosse Pointe, but then there was some kind of housing market collapse and it was abandoned for decades. This community was founded 5 years ago and only got legal recognition last year. It was quite a fight. But when they got the rights to the land, they also got their first volunteers from the Urban Forestry Corps.
We stopped at a large building that kind of looked like a Gothic church. With tall arch windows, it was grand looking, and not what I expected.
This is the Monteith. The UFC office is here.
It used to be a library?
It still is. The reading rooms are amazing. But it's also a community center, adult school. Basically, it's the city hall of Abir Devereaux.
We stop in front of a mural of a Bangladeshi man and a black woman. Both of them have gray hair and they're shaking hands. Scenes from the creation of the community are arranged around them, including one of what looks like a barricade of burning furniture and a pitched street battle with police in riot gear. In another, the man with black hair is helping a group of people put together rickshaws. And in another, the woman is leading a group of refugees in cutting back brush and planting seeds.
That's Deepu Abir and Chantal Devereaux. Deepu was a refugee from Bangladesh, and Chantal came up from New Orleans after the big floods. They became leaders of the community when the city tried to push them off the land.
The Monteith was like no other library I've ever seen. It was packed with people. There was a huge line of people waiting to register for an English class. New arrivals from Rescue and Resettlement, Max explained. We passed electronic classrooms and a studio where they were teaching oil painting. The students were actually copying the same painting of Mina Niazi that was on our pedicab.
Santa Mina is a very popular motif around here.
This place is incredible.
Yeah. Goes to show that a library isn't just for books. They teach all kinds of classes here. Those art students can get good jobs in the rickshaw factory. I've been teaching classes on permaculture, English as a second language, and I've also been studying here. Mostly electronic music.
We walked out of the back of the library onto a large patio. Behind it is stretched out Abir Devereaux, gardens and low bamboo buildings as far as I could see. We paused to watch a bunch of silent young people dancing in front of a DJ. I couldn't hear any music.
Oh, right. You probably don't have an uplink.
Oh no, that terrifies me.
Well, among the many, many effects of the internet brain interface is the rebirth of the silent disco. It's still not the same as the feeling of bass pulse through your body, but it's nicer to the neighbors. There are still great raves in the factory districts. Want to listen?
Max took out a pair of headphones from his shoulder bag. I put them on. Oh, I like this.
The music is the best. All the new population has really mixed it up, too. It seems like every day there's a new genre as jazz punk players from New Orleans mix it up with Bengali R&B, eco-techno and new Gaia's trip-hop. It's amazing. We don't even have names for some of the styles being laid down here.
I listened for a bit and could start to feel the rhythm. I watched the dancers and kind of wanted to join them, but then I saw someone in the crowd. He wasn't dancing. He was standing there, and he wasn't looking at the DJ. He was looking at me. A white-bearded man, older than everyone else in that crowd. I shuddered and told myself I was overreacting, but took off the headphones and gave them back to Max. We started walking. I looked over my shoulder, and the man was gone. So, how many people here have the uplink?
I don't know. Probably most of them. At least anyone under 40. It doesn't seem to work as well with people over 40. Brain plasticity or something like that.
Maybe it's related to language learning. That gets harder, too.
Yeah, that could be. You know, a lot of people are really scared of the uplink, and I get it. The tech giants promise that the firewall between your private thoughts and the internet is impermeable, but those of us who've tried the commercial uplink have noticed that, well, if we think of a mattress, we suddenly start seeing ads for the newest mail-order mattress.
That's creepy enough when your phone does that to you. Where do you see these ads?
They call it the thought screen. Kind of like a VR headset, but inside your headspace. There's an option where you can see the internet portal overlaid over your actual vision, but that just seems to cover everything with ads. Which, I guess, is better than actual advertisements being plastered over everything, but it's weird to try and sit on a park bench only to have it turn into a celebrity talking about whitening toothpaste.
You said the commercial uplink. What do you have?
It's not military tech, that's for sure. No, it's one of the third-party open-source versions, like Suplink, Earworm, Netizen. They all use some pretty tough Russian encryption. And then there's the ELAN, the Encapsulated Local Area Network. We have our own intranet around here, basically. It's primitive, but it runs on its own frequency, and it's completely walled off from the internet. You can access one or the other, but never both at the same time. The ELAN allows us to communicate privately within the community, and there are ways to access other ELANs out there. Almost every new Gaia sanctuary has an intranet, for example. Most of us spend a lot of time on the ELAN, even though it's not legal or regulated.
When I was growing up, my town had a pirate radio station.
That's a good comparison. Is that how you got into it? Radio, I mean?
Yep. I tried it and loved it and never looked back. Max spent the rest of the afternoon showing me around Abir Deverell. You wouldn't know that 3,000 people lived here. Sometimes you feel you're in an overgrown urban garden, and other times you feel like you're in a forest. One thing that struck me were the birds. They were everywhere, and so were their songs. I was amazed by how green it was, but also how everywhere you looked, people were active. Planting, teaching, learning crafts, preparing communal meals. We visited an outdoor elementary school classroom meeting in a gazebo, and one of the gardeners explained permaculture to me in a way that I never heard before, and it finally made sense. This little community almost feeds itself, and together, all the urban farms make Detroit one of the most self-sufficient cities in the world. Everybody here seems so proud of what they have built, and so connected to one another. I can really see why you like this place.
It reminds me of what I imagined the Wilder student community could be, back in Oneonta.
Yeah. I remember some of the Wilder students gave you a lot of flack for going urban forestry route.
Well, they meant well. I still talk to Scion pretty often. I think they see it differently now, too. They're planning to visit later this year.
Scion's my next interview, actually. I'll say hello.
Oh, please do.
We continue our tour, and Max showed me the community cemetery, mounds of earth with tree growing out of each mound. Green burial is the norm in the country now, though many communities utilize commercial facilities. Abir Deverell does it old school, though, with earth and fungus and trees. My head was spinning with ideas. This was nothing like any community I've ever visited. It felt worlds away from SUNY Oneonta or my hometown. I could never see myself in the world exactly, but I felt a kind of pull here. After we had a communal vegetarian dinner, Max and I walked to the club in an old factory. The club was crowded and bathed in blue light. We sat at the bar. I watched the dance floor, people swaying with the music. I kind of wanted to join them, but I also wanted to ask Max more questions. And I was a little spooked from seeing that bearded guy earlier in the day. It felt safer here, where I could see everything around me. So, Max, you're halfway through your national service year. How do you feel about it so far?
I feel at home. That's all I can say. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's the closest place I've experienced that feels sustainable. I mean, like, in an ecological sense, sure, but I mean sustainable for me, in that I feel like this community sustains me and I have a role in sustaining it. What more is there?
You sound like you're never gonna leave.
I might not. There's a lifetime of meaningful work here. You know, it's funny. Abir Deverell has been one of the communities leading the charge against the Southwest Water Pipeline Project. We're not against the idea of sharing our water with the Southwest, but it's the fact that it's being used to prop up Phoenix and other communities that just aren't sustainable in the first place. They're used to buying their water from the water cartels, and they think they can just buy ours and run it through open irrigation canals and use it to fill their swimming pools. We have a responsibility to ensure proper end use of the resource. Anyway, as an Urban Forestry Corps community organizer, I helped organize the neighborhood's civil disobedience actions against the pipeline construction site. That's a Corps of Geoengineers project. I know some National Service volunteers working on that project. They're not happy about the lack of end-use stewardship either. You have to laugh. Sometimes that's the beauty of bureaucracies. Sometimes one hand doesn't know what the other is doing. Anyway, I landed in the right place. Abir Devereaux is at heart a DIY grassroots community. A lot of the focus in the fight against climate change is on the big government programs. I don't argue with the necessity of big programs, but the grassroots efforts like Abir Devereaux exist to create balance. We know now that resilience needs to be built into every level of society, like how the electrical grid is more resilient because of all the community microgrids.
Your enthusiasm is contagious, Max. I'm almost a true believer.
Stay here a while and we'll fully convert you. You know, there's so much destruction all around, but then there's places like Abir Devereaux, where people are building something new, something beautiful. Something new but also old, you know? Like something basic and essential that we knew, then forgot, then rediscovered.
Yeah, I get you. I mean, I don't, but I'm starting to. I'm sorry, I should answer this. Hello?
Hello, Hero. It's Cora Minas. I'm sorry it took so long for me to get this to you, but I had to jump through a lot of hoops to get around the privacy protocols and such. If I get caught, I'll be in big trouble. I searched my flight recordings, and I'm pretty sure this was the person following Nadej.
That's him! The guy from the disco!
You saw him?
Definitely! I think I better get moving.
That's probably prudent.
Thanks, C.
Who's following you? And why are you talking to an airship AI?
Can you get me back to the aerodrome?
Already pinged a driver. Is your ticket transferable?
I have an all-access transport pass.
Oh, those are rare. Hey, let me see that image again. I'll put it out to the network and see if anyone's noticed him.
Max's eyes fluttered, and several dancers stopped moving and started looking around them. Max's eyes fluttered again.
So yeah, that guy's been all over the neighborhood today, asking questions and just hanging around. A bunch of people saw him. About 30 minutes ago, he asked another UFC volunteer where I was. He's probably on his way over. No, he's in line to get in.
This is crazy.
We can go out this way. Pedicab's waiting. The 2041 podcast is a production of the A.J. Reed Science Discovery Center of SUNY Oneonta, starring Rosie Baez as Hero Contreras, Deanna Prekpalai as Cora Minas, and Alex Headley as Max Rodriguez. Music and sound design by Andres Ballin, Spring 2022 Studio Assistant 2 class. Written by Doug Riley. Next week, a stranger, a detour, and some answers.